Okay, welcome to part two of our After Sunday podcast. And so we're going to start. Matthew is going to have a few things to say just about, I think we've been talking together here a little bit about trying to kind of figure out and navigate the times that we're in right now. Obviously, there's so many issues of racism. There's so many conversations going on. So Matthew, why don't you jump right in?
Yeah. So Corey and Talia, I'd love to hear from you guys, just your thoughts on currently the world we're in. Cause it felt like we all saw the horrific police brutality right there with George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And then we've been hearing the topic of racism come up, and I feel like as a Christian, we look at that and we should feel total sadness to that moment with George Floyd. And number two is as I said in part one, we're opposed to racism because the kingdom of God is opposed to racism. Mm-hmm. And it feels like this could have been an opportunity in North America, at least, for great unity, mm-hmm. like actually coming together and going, that's so bad, right? Like there need to be reforms in that police department and we need to fix this and something's broken and racism is so wrong. And like, what an opportunity to come together. And yet it feels like we're not together. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, how could something that seems so, something that we could all rally around have become so divisive so quickly? And I think at North Langley, we felt that even like on Facebook and in some of the conversations we're having, and maybe some of us have friends or family that we're interacting with, and we're going, why are we seeing this so differently? And I think so what I wanted to do is have like a podcast set aside to kind of go, what is going on? Like, why are we so divided? And like, why couldn't even this thing, why is this thing dividing us? Mm-hmm. And so anyway, yeah. Any thoughts on that before we jump in here from you guys?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing, like just being, I'm not on social media a lot, but I have been more so recently, just with, this very, very, like all the discussion and the, in a lot of ways, it feels like attacking that are coming from different sides. And it's made me very tired. It's made me sad. I think especially seeing some of within Christian, the body of Christ, seeing some of the things that are being said. But overall, just feeling kind of tired. And I think the one thing, if there's one message that I would want to kind of to tell people, is to be quick to listen, slow to speak. Mm-hmm. And those aren't my words. That's straight from James. But I think there is a quickness to be defensive. And, and I'd mentioned this earlier in the first part, that when someone brings to light something that was done that was hurtful, that, was received in a way that that is racist, it can feel instantly like you're being demonized as this horrible person, that you're right. This racist, and like I said, it's like, okay, well, we're not part of the Ku Klux Klan, we're not white supremacists. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily, I hope, what is the person is being accused of, but just saying, hey, this specific instance, it was offensive. And so I think, just being quick to listen is so important. Yeah. To not receive criticism as just this overall condemnation of you as a person and your character, but to recognize that, this person, you don't know all their history, what they've been through, and how what you may have said contributed. And I think a message that I would want to kind of sum that up is that intent doesn't trump impact. And it's so easy to think like, oh, well, that's not what I intended. You're too sensitive. You took it this way. But that doesn't take away the impact that it had on this person. Like, sure. your intentions may have been, completely innocent. But depending on what that person's history has been, it wasn't received that way. So yeah, I think just being willing to listen to people's stories, and and again, that's why I'm just thankful for you guys giving me that opportunity to share that. Even if you're something you hear, you may think like, oh, okay, come on, like you're being too sensitive, or that's not what they meant. If we can kind of curb that desire and just listen and, you know, to thank people for being willing to share. And, you know, not that I'm looking, not specifically talking about myself right now, but just especially thinking about online interactions, you know, if somebody's sharing their side, like how important it is to put down the desire to be defensive and to jump to counter arguments or anything, but just to like, okay, thank you for sharing. I'm sorry you've been hurt in that way.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I've contributed to hurt. I think that's so important.
Absolutely.
That's so massive. Great. Yeah, that's huge. And it's funny, even as you say that, I'm just thinking through different scenarios in my head and I'm like, yeah, I think it's so good. And it takes a lot of maturity, I think, actually to do that, right? Like, I know in myself, like just the ugliness that rises up right away when you're being accused of something or not even accused of something, but maybe like you say, maybe I'm receiving it as though I'm being accused, but actually this person is just saying, hey, that kind of hurt, or that, you know, or maybe they're not saying it as eloquently as that. Maybe they're like, how dare you, or whatever, you know? Yeah, I think you're right that our quick reaction is to like hit back harder or to like, you know, find a way to, but it's so good. And you're so right. Like just to be able to have the humility to not solve this for yourself really quickly, but actually instead to be like, I'm going to absorb that and I'm going to take a second and acknowledge the fact that actually, yeah, like you say, like I haven't walked in your shoes. Actually, I don't know what your story is. I don't know where some of this is coming from. And maybe I inadvertently... Yeah, did something here. Sounds like I did actually, you know, and but that's it's tough, but that's really good. Super good.
And I do I also feel that it's important for me to speaking, especially since we're talking about culture and you know what we're kind of dealing with right now, to specifically name some of these, you know, examples. And so an easy example, and I know this won't be new for most people, as the Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter, and you've kind of brought this up already as well. And just, you know, that's a perfect example of where, you know, someone saying Black Lives Matter, and if the gut reaction to say, well, everybody matters, you know, it's as opposed to pointing out the fact that someone is feeling like their life doesn't matter right now. And, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. We're not saying, you know, it does not in any way mean that black or that all lives don't matter or that Black Lives Matter more.
Right.
And again, I know I'm not saying anything new. I know this has been the endless discussion back and forth, but that's just one example of where the wanting to counter is often, you know, kind of dismissing someone's their hurt or their story.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's so helpful. And I think when I was trying to figure out what was going on, I had a lot of internal angst going on, like in the first week and a half for sure, when this kind of started 3 weeks ago, when we saw what was going on with George Floyd. And it was actually really helpful for me to kind of go, I think there's a whole system of thinking going on behind all of this that is causing a problem. Like, why we can't get unity on this is because of something I'd like to propose here. And I was really helped by Mark Sayers, in his podcast, This Cultural Moment, that he does with John Mark Comer. And so season one, episode three, I'm going to pull some stuff from that. And I would just encourage anyone who wants to kind of check that out. Just Mark Sayers, John Mark Comer, This Cultural Moment, season one, episode three. So Mark Sayers talks about, with secularism, is progress without presence. I like that phrase. So like, seeking the progress that in culture without the presence of God, or seeing the kingdom without the king, right? Mm-hmm. Wanting the kingdom without the king. And so secularism goes, okay, we're moving ahead with all kinds of progress, with equality and justice and freedom and opportunity and wealth and whatever. But we have put away God. Like, God is no longer a thing, like no need for him. But what we've inadvertently done is we've thrown out morality. Along with it, like moral, like where do you get those moral systems? Do you get them from, philosophical evolution and, you know, evolution, like where you just kind of go, oh, okay, this, we're all random, like it's all, every life is kind of meaningless and it's all big fish eat the little fish and that's how things progress. And it's like, but when you hear on the streets, what are people chanting? They're chanting equality. They're chanting justice. Like, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. Like, where do you get those? Those are moral categories, like, and Ravi Zacharias, who just passed away, like, he would say, where on earth are you going to try to find equality and justice with atheistic evolutionary thought? Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be really hard for you to find the idea of what is justice or the idea of what is equality. And as Christians, it's rooted in the Imago Dei, right? Which we talked about in episode one here of our little podcast. And so I think this was really helpful to try to go, okay, let's put ourselves in a secular mindset and go progress without presence, kingdom without a king. We want justice, equality, peace, prosperity, but we don't want Jesus. And therefore, this is my main point. Politics becomes the new religion. Hmm. Politics is the new religion. And it's where we get our meaning and our identity. So right now, we have an increase of the hard left and the hard right. Right? So when you're on Facebook, hard left, hard right. Right? There's very little opportunity for nuance or for like, hey, this is complicated, or hey, let's do what Tolu was suggesting from the Bible. Let's listen to each other. Let's, no, because when you are on the left and I'm on the right or vice versa, you are a threat to me and you're a threat to the progress that we want to make as a culture. So religion is now politics. Mm. Politics is religion. Like it's, and Christians are actually opting in to that whole system, right? So yeah, sure, I love Jesus. And I was trying to get at this yesterday in the sermon. But yeah, I love Jesus. But actually, my worldview and my political worldview and the idea of what I believe will give us progress is now a central part of who I am. And you begin to find hard left and hard right are whole systems that are just going further and further apart. Like, they're just like, again, podcast listeners are not watching my hands. But my hands are moving further apart. So like, you know, And so I think I struggle with the fact that what happened was immediately the news came out and somehow it became a hard left, hard right issue. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden, like how you viewed the death of George Floyd and how you view racism, it just went far right, far left. And I felt like for like a week and a half, I was stuck going, what is going on? Why are we not agreeing? And I'm just wondering about the idea of politics as a new religion. Like politics is how we're going to bring the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, right? Mm. To use scripture language, you know? Right. So anyway, I'm going to play around with that idea, but just right off the top, like thoughts on that or?
Yeah, I think it's true. Like, I don't know how much I have to say, but like, I feel like, so I wonder if so much of this has to do with belonging. Like part of it is like, I want to belong to a group. Like, I don't want to be in no man's land. Like so when I have a buddy or someone who says something that kind of makes sense factually, or, you know, is doing that, it's like, there's this false law that you have to join a side almost, like, you know, an extreme right or extreme left kind of thing, as opposed to, I felt probably like actually like many of us where I feel like in the last few weeks and actually to be honest in the last few years, not mentioning any names, Ronald Lump. I'm just saying, you know, just joking. No, I'm just kidding. But like, you know, there's so many things where there is so much polarization going on where you just feel like I often am feeling like I don't know, I just don't know where I belong here because I understand some of these things on the right and I understand some of these things on the left and I'm trying to figure out kind of like where you feel like you're just kind of wandering almost aimlessly.
You're lost in the middle.
You're lost in the middle. And right. So it's like, and you have that, there does feel as though it's like, no one's saying this out loud, but you almost feel like, no, you got to pick a side, man. Like pick a side. Which side are you on? Are you not? Well, then if you're not a friend, you're an enemy, you know? And so I'm just reflecting on what you're saying, but not really.
No,
I think it makes sense with what you're talking about. Yeah.
I think Christians are literally feeling like your arms are getting pulled on either side. And if you're trying to follow the way of Jesus, you're going, oh, it seems like in scripture, there is a care for creation. So I want to do things that help the environment. Right. And yet also in scripture, it seems like the child in the mother's womb is really is a life. And so when I hear left-leaning activists about creation or about talking about environment and issues of the environment, or I hear pro-life movement talking about the importance of the child, my arms are stretched sideways. I don't know where to land.
Totally.
With hard left and hard right.
And this is just an idea that came to my mind too. I wonder if part of it is, in a sense, there's almost this, it's hard to acknowledge that maybe things aren't as good as we thought they were. And that there is a problem, because I think a lot of, and especially in Canada, I will say, and I'm speaking specifically when it comes to for Black people, that I think there was a sense, and actually I shouldn't even say Canada, I'll speak to my experience in, you know, BC right now, that, yeah, it's not that bad. It's, you know, it's not that big a deal. And so I think when, you know, kind of this, like just really just blew up, and everybody's saying like, this is awful. Like, it is that bad. There is a huge problem here. I wonder if there's this sense of, you know, like, okay, yeah, yeah, that was a bad situation, but like, let's not throw the whole thing out, and just this rise to like, no, like, you know, things are generally okay. And then you get, you know, all the other side going like, no, 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 this is, and just that kind of escalation. And maybe it's stemming a bit from a point of not wanting to acknowledge that like there is a problem.
Right? Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the larger sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I think one of the things that happens when we think about politics as a new religion, what happens is there's a control over language. And I think this is a really big thing that I was sensing. So like if you think of maybe the right being a dominant, occupying the heights of the moral culture, right? Like for many years you would say, oh, it's conservatives that are moral conservatives that are leading, or maybe how we would see the Bible, read the Bible, they're kind of in power. So what happens is in the 1960s, you have all these movements that are countercultural movements, right? And so whether it's kind of like all sexual liberation movements or whatever, you're like, okay, they're trying to dethrone the powers, right? Because the powers currently are not allowing certain freedoms. Now what's happened is a lot of those countercultural movements from the 1960s, 70s are now occupying positions of power. Right. So, and I think a lot of people felt this when in America, when Obama became president, because there was a sense of like, oh, the left, you know, even though Clinton had been president and whatever, and Jimmy Carter as well. But like, there was a sense of like, oh, like the progressive narrative has now become the powers that be. Mm. And so what happens when you occupy the heights of a progressive culture, you have to stay in charge. This is what Mark Sayers is arguing. He says you have to control language. You have to censor and shame. And this is anyone in power. Like if you're on the right or the left, this is what you do. You'll censor, you'll shame, and you become judgmental. You become angry. Mm. And I don't think it's the way of Jesus. And so I feel like what I have started to experience is when we as Christians get involved in some of these culture wars, hard right, hard left, all of a sudden there's one side wants to control how the other is using language, right? Mm. And so language is so important. And again, back to your point, Talu, listening, right? Like the book of James. But I found so much of the George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter, like a lot of it centers around how you use language. Mm. And that language is power. And so rather than actually understanding and listening, right, it becomes this like tool for power. And so conservatives right now, let's say hard right, is very much in fear because it feels like the hard left is occupying the powers, even though some would argue Donald Trump is president, right? And so you go, oh, okay, well, how does this work? Like now that feels like the hard right is in power. And so we're all just vying for control over language, which I felt was part of this. Hmm. Anyway, because in this, there was a sense of like, who is a racist, right? And so when you use language, you go, oh, well, I'm not a racist, right? Like I don't think I'm a racist. And someone else goes, yeah, there's systemic racism. You have a bias within you. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to figure out, well, what does racist mean, right? Well, I'm going to use racist for my tribe, and I'm going to use racist for my definition of racist in my tribe, and no one's listening to each other,
right?
And I felt paralyzed. Like I'm like, I think we're defining things poorly here. Like totally, we're polarized, we can't even agree upon what we mean when we talk about racism or a bias or things like that.
Totally.
So I felt like the conversation wasn't being had anyway.
Yeah. I think it's true. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's a good point. I feel like that, and again, right now we're in the middle of this huge conversation about racism and and obviously, like, you know, police reforms and all these things that are coming up. And but I think you're right. I think it's definitions is that's maybe to me that's the key issue maybe with language is definitions. Like, because I know I felt like, again, in the last couple of years when, like, I remember someone asked me, like, oh, are you a Christian? And I remember right away just like all these things going off in my head, like, hey, what is a Christian to you? Like, what do you picture when you say the word Christian, right? Because it depends on who you're talking to. Someone might, and I know I'm off on a rabbit trail, but like someone might say, well, a Christian is someone who is honest and who's good and who you know works hard and will, you know, will treat you fairly and all those good things. But then there's a whole other definition of the word Christian depending on what your background is, right? And like you say, yeah, it's like you would hope that we would all understand what racism is, and we'd say, of course, racism is wrong, right? And then you have other conversations where it's like, oh, I don't think I didn't know that was included under the umbrella of what it means, because I'm not saying the exact thing the way you want me to say it. Then I'm suddenly in this other camp. That's maybe where the minefields come in, right? Where you're like, oh, I don't think I'm not speaking this the way you want me to speak this, and so I'm now suddenly I find myself on the outs, or I'm suddenly in the other camp, you know, the enemy camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Tolu has because we were chatting earlier, Tolu has something to say about this next point, because I think this language piece is massively important. So here is the big example. So the big thing that I want to clarify today or talk about involves language, and it involves just the phrase Black Lives Matter, right? Mm. So if I could on this podcast say Black Lives Matter, like they do matter. Now, when I say Black Lives Matter, those on the hard left are going, finally, you said it, right? Mm-hmm. Those on the hard right are going, you're falling into an ideology. Mm-hmm. So here I am as a Christian going, well, hold on a second. It feels like, just in the same way, there's times where I have to say the unborn matter, right? Creation matters. I don't know. Like, pick your topic. Mm-hmm. Like, there are times where you have to go, I need to say unborn babies matter, right? Like, in the same way I'm saying Black Lives Matter. And so they do matter. But yet there seems to be a difference between saying Black Lives Matter and hashtag Black Lives Matter. So here's a little, I want to just make a little quick point here. And I really want to hear what you guys think about this. But so I feel like it's important for Christians to say, yes, Black Lives Matter, Imago Dei, right? Like the image of God. It's important to say that. Yet for me, one of the trickiest things, it's why is this so complicated, right? Like, and I'm just being honest, like I'm trying to be vulnerable to say this was really complicated for me, because I knew to use the phrase Black Lives Matter carried with it the hashtag Black Lives Matter. It's the actual movement, right? Or the, you know, they've got the copyright, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an actual, you can go to the website, you can read up some of their values. And so, and let me just tell you just really quick, a few beautiful things about the hashtag Black Lives Matter. So this is the movement. So this is from their webpage. So you can go to their website, you can find their, what they believe. But these are things I think Christians, we can get behind in the hashtag Black Lives Matter. It's number one, we acknowledge, respect, and celebrate differences and commonalities. Beautiful. Number two, we work vigorously for freedom and justice for Black people, and by extension, all people. That's fascinating, right? Because to say all lives matter is such a slap in the face, right? Like, it's just a terrible thing to say. But yet, Black Lives Matter, they're acknowledging all people. Right? I think that's beautiful. And I think Christians, we can get behind that. Number three, we intentionally build and nurture a beloved community that is bonded together through a beautiful struggle that is restorative, not depleting. A restorative community. I'm like, yes, I love that. That's wonderful. Okay. But then the tricky side of this is that you go on to read on their, what they're about, several things that personally I would have difficulty marching for. So we're self-reflective and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folk, especially Black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. Now, okay, we just went through the Love series, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can totally get behind people not bullying or persecuting trans people. Like, absolutely. Like, they're made in the image of God. We don't want that. Mm. But what does it mean? Like, I've got like tons of follow-up questions to the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
What is it? What does that mean to dismantle cisgender privilege? I just have so many questions to try to figure out what on earth does that look like, and what will you be advocating for when you talk about cisgender privilege? The second one that I struggled with on their values is building a space that they wrote this, building a space that affirms Black women and is free from sexism and misogyny. And I almost wish they would have just put a period there, because I can get behind that. Mm-hmm. But it goes on to say, and environments in which men are centered. So again, I'm like, I think, like, yes, have men done horrific things? And yes, absolutely. But this idea that, oh, if a man is the leader of this organization, so I'm a man who's the lead pastor of a church, right? Like, it's, there is something inherently flawed about that organization, right? Like, and I'm like, okay, well, hold on. Can we sit down for coffee? Can we listen to each other? I just want to ask a follow-up question. And sorry, I know I'm talking a lot here, but the third one that I had trouble with is, here's their third value that I struggle with. We foster a queer-affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that all the world are heterosexual. Okay. Half of that, I'm like, totally. Mm-hmm. We do not want to be homophobic. Like, mm-hmm. not at all. We love Jesus. We follow Jesus. Like, this is not, there's no room for homophobia. Mm-hmm. And yet, again, follow-up question. What does it mean to foster a queer-affirming network? Like, if I sign on the dotted line on hashtag Black Lives Matter, what am I affirming? What is a queer-affirming network? So here's my point. Sorry, that was a lot. But my point is, how is it that right now, this control of language, the far right says, don't say Black Lives Matter, right? Because it's an ideology. The far left goes, why aren't you saying Black Lives Matter? And the Christian is like, paralyzed. Like, I guess what I'm saying is, I felt paralyzed because I just don't know what I'm getting behind with the hashtag Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, yeah, enough for me. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Yeah, if I can speak to a couple of those points, I think... So in one sense, my first, earlier you said, why is this so complicated? And in one sense, I feel like, yeah, you're right. Like, it shouldn't be, and like, this shouldn't, unfortunately, like, why are we even talking about politics and this left and right? Like, we're talking about human lives mattering. Like, that should be a simple topic we all agree on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think for someone like myself, and there's kind of two sides to this, obviously, as speaking as a Black person, but even just speaking as a person in this culture, that just feeling that it shouldn't be complicated. Yeah, to say Black Lives Matter is a fact, and I know that you 100% agree with that. So, like, I'll be honest, I haven't even thought of the implications of the hashtag and the movement, and I haven't been to their website. I haven't read their values. So even going through these with you, I'm even learning more about what they stand for and kind of the details of their movement. And I guess my question to you would be, so, on those three points that you mentioned, that kind of you have follow-up questions, and not that obviously having follow-up questions in and of itself is a problem, but I wonder, and I put myself in this boat as well, does some of that, like, hesitation or that, like, I was with you until hinge from, like, a feeling of almost being threatened personally? And so, like, I'll use an example of the man-centered organization.
Yeah.
I'm a man. Do I kind of have a, oh, okay, hold up, what do you mean there?
Yeah.
Because that's me you're talking about now, and dismantling. So, yeah, obviously dismantle can feel like a very, we're tearing down, and what does that mean for me personally? So I guess that would be kind of my question is, does some of that, hesitation or concern, I guess, come from, because I guess when I hear dismantle, and sorry, can you read the, I want to make sure I'm quoting it right.
It says, we are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. Mm-hmm. Oh no, sorry. And the one you're looking at is, we build a space that affirms Black women and is free from sexism and misogyny. and environments in which men are centered.
Mm-hmm. So, and I guess even thinking of, again, to your point, like, you know, you're a man as a leader of this church. I guess when I hear that, I don't necessarily think, you know, men can't be in these positions, but environments where men are centered, meaning like prioritized, or you know, there isn't equal opportunity. That's kind of what, what I would hear there.
Yeah,
and then even to the first one, because I guess that does apply to me as, you know, a cisgendered person. You know, if they're talking about dismantling systems that would prioritize a cisgendered person, if that gives me pause, is that, am I feeling threatened? Whereas, you know, I would take that language to mean, again, that we want equality, and just want to remove that prioritization, I guess, is kind of what I hear there.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's a good question. And I think that is the question we have. Like, yeah, is Matthew threatened? I mean, I am like we're going to talk about intersectionality in a second, but I'm like the bottom rung. I'm like a white male from the United States, from the South, who's a Christian. Like, I mean, they're like, I'm probably like the enemy, right? Of, you know, and I think I could say, oh, am I being threatened? I think that's a really good question. And maybe there's some of that in there. I think, okay, if I could put the lens on of like apprenticeship to Jesus and going, what would Jesus do when we're thinking about the church of Jesus, how is it that, like, how can you affirm the value and dignity of a whole bunch of people without bringing down the idea of the value and dignity of others? I think, I think that's maybe my question, is I'm going, in order to promote, you know, someone, just to say, okay, so you're Black or you're a woman, and in order to affirm you, I have to dethrone something else. I wonder if that's like a way of viewing the world. Like, I don't share that way of viewing the world. I'm like, it feels like what Jesus did is he elevated all of us. He took us all up. It's like, my hands are going up for podcast listeners. My hands are going up. Like all of us are elevated. Like, and all of us elevated to this ridiculously high place of child of God, so that if a white man or a Black woman is leading an organization, we go, made in the image of God, cared for. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just, I haven't caught up with the idea that you have to bring down in order to bring up. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something that I can educate myself or something. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the, I don't know. Anyway.
You're talking about sort of a zero sum, that whole zero sum equation, like where it's like, which I think we all fall into, the idea that, like, you know, if it's like, oh, if that person's at 80%, it means that I only am at 20%, you know, which is usually false, right? That sort of picture. And so I think that's what you're saying, Matthew, that you feel like, does it have to be that way, or can it be that it's like, yeah, like everyone actually rises up? But I appreciate your perspective, Tolu, as well, because I wouldn't, and I guess, and then maybe that's, again, back to the language problem, is that you see, again, I think that the media tends to show us the extremes, right? Like, we do see the extremes, whether it's the extreme right, like I would say the ugliness of both extremes, right? Like where it's like, oh, like this, like a, like maybe a very violent approach to solving these issues, right? And full of, you know, anger, and like just very, very polarizing. And that's because it's like, it reminds me of almost like when you say, like, Ruby, my daughter, actually had this encounter the other day where someone had said to her, it's like, and in a way that she knew right away, it was a loaded question, where it's like, so do you support Black Lives Matter? And she, I forget, I think she answered really well, but we were talking about it, you know, and like you, I think, Tolu, you had said, like, I, again, having hindsight is always 20/20, but like, you, like, I would want to just say, if someone asked me that, I'd want to say, like, of course Black Lives Matter, like, absolutely 100%, you know, and try to get out of it that way. But they'd be like, no, I mean, do you support Black Lives Matter? I'm like, I think Black Lives Matter, like, of course I do. Like, what are you talking, you know?
But you're missing each other in the conversation, exactly, right?
As, like, opposed to signing the contract,
the
17-page contract, where there's some fine print in the middle that I may have missed. That's where I think it can get awkward. But I think at the same time, the last thing I want to do, you know, like, trust me, I'm not siding with these other people, you know, by hesitating, just so you know, please don't ever think that I am I'm one of them, right? You know, you, I think there's that human impulse. That's right. Where you're like, no, I'm not. It's just that I like, I feel, can we talk a little bit about the website and just some of the, because there's a couple points that I just want to be clear
Let's
about.
Sit down at a coffee shop. Say,
yeah, exactly.
So our good friend, Sid Fensom, brought up a really good point. He said, Matthew, you got to be realistic. You can't always pick the people you protest with. Like you can't, you can't always, you know, and it's like, so how, you know, how specific am I going to get that? Like everyone that I'm walking down the street with
believes
what I believe. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm like, so I get that. But I'm saying like, if I want to follow Jesus, like I just feel like we have to be critical thinkers about it. And J.D. Greer, he's the head of the Southern Baptist Convention. He just came out last week with a video saying Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. but he said, but not, so these are my words, not hashtag Black Lives Matter. Mm. So you kind of make everyone mad, which is maybe what I just did right now too. Totally, but like, you know, you make everyone upset because you're like, oh, you're not going the full way. Or look, you compromised.
Right.
Now you're
part of this
leftist ideological movement that, mm-hmm. you know, is just trying to take power in Washington or whatever. So,
right.
Hey, so just like last week in the sermon I just talked about, there's this one area that people had a hard time with when I talked about the not protesting with people that are calling most cops are bad cops or defund the police or whatever. And I understand that. So I just want to bring a little bit of clarity to what I was thinking. So I'm glad we get to do this podcast. It's almost like a redo. My hesitation with marching with people that have the police in mind in that way is not, it's not all bad. So I just want to say, like, I am totally behind movements of reformation, like reforming police departments, like 100%. And I think we should support those ideas. And to be honest, I feel like police departments want to do that as well. Like many want to be reformed. And I'm speaking from a Canadian context, right? Like it's been a long time since I've lived in Oklahoma, so I don't really know the police departments there, but and I don't know Minneapolis's police department, right? Like maybe they need to fully be defunded. I don't know, right? But like when I think about our RCMP or Vancouver Police Department, I'm thinking about I think we added it up the other day. I think it was over 25 police officers that attend North Langley, right? And I think when I see signs, I was looking at this protest in Seattle and it was just like, most cops are bad cops, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm just like, what cops, where, like, you know, and I just, I don't, it's such a blanket statement. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, well you carry a gun and you must be a person of authority. And so therefore we're going to deconstruct any authority structures here. Mm-hmm. Right. I struggle with that, mm-hmm. especially knowing amazing police officers. So mm-hmm. to me, I don't know if I could march mm-hmm. with that. Now, defund the police is a, by the way, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Totally.
So if you look it up, it's not one way of thinking, right? The area that I would have agreement with is like, okay, so you want to maybe demilitarize a little bit and maybe use some money for some other organizations. That's fine. But some of the defund the police is really naive. Like we can get rid of a police department and just use social workers or mental health workers. And I know Kim's a social worker and, you know, and they do great work, but, you know, picturing, homicides, you know, or picturing, like, I don't know how that would work. And I also in the New Testament see the New Testament church. I mean, obviously they're living in a Roman Empire and they didn't really have a choice, but you see like, you know, the centurions who are giving their life to God. And they're, you know, you just see this sense of like Paul talking about, hey, the government authorities are there and they bring justice and they're there for a reason. And so I guess I'm way more comfortable with the language of reform rather than one final thing on this defunding the police. In the 1970s, there was a movement called the Black Liberation Army, and a lot of Black Panthers were actually moving into the Black Liberation Army. And they were opposed to reform. And I'm just going to quote their document here. It says, reform of the oppressive system can never benefit its victims. In the final analysis, the system of oppression was created to ensure the rule of a particular race, of particular racist classes. So see, the Black Liberation Army would use violence to overthrow a system, not reform a system. So it's like, this system has gotten so bad. It's so bad. You have to overthrow the whole thing, you know? And maybe there's a time and a place for that. I guess what I'm saying is in Western Canada in the 21st century, I don't think that's a protest I want to be part of. I would say, let's talk reform, but let's not talk defund the police. If anything, they need funding for better training, body cams, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I know I'm getting really specific here, but I just thought, how can we add training and help to the great men and women who are serving us rather than carrying around these like utopian signs that are like, I just don't feel they're grounded in the real world. Maybe they're grounded in Minneapolis's real world. I want to say that, right? But I don't feel like they're grounded in the reality that I'm in. But of course, I might be wrong. Tolu, Corey, help me.
I mean, I think it is interesting because I feel like this also ties back to kind of the general point you've been making about how the conversation so quickly just like, it's like, how did we end up here? And so, and even just like connotations of different things. So even like with Black Lives Matter, I do feel there is this sense that it has become associated with anti-police. And and there definitely is some of that out there. And so that's another one of those things where it's like, you know, it's almost like, well, if I say Black Lives Matter, am I saying I think cops are all bad or corrupt? And my sister is with the RCMP, like, and I know many police officers, and I'm absolutely, as a like speaking for myself, like in no way am I, you know, anti-cop or anti-police or anything like that. And it's sad to see how, it has flipped the other way and feeling the police officers, men and women who do feel threatened and have been threatened, because, and, you know, being blamed as an entire organization, for specific things that are going on. So I do see how that, kind of muddies the waters a bit. And in that sense of, okay, well, if I say this, does that mean I'm also saying this and this and this?
Right.
I don't know. I
think interesting. Really... No, absolutely. Like, it's the package deal. Like, you're talking about, like, it's a combo deal, right? Like, so it feels like these ideas are kind of like little cocktails of ideas on the hard right and on the hard left. And to say Black Lives Matter, you feel like, oh, am I saying an anti-cop statement? And it's so unfortunate, right? Because I feel like the Christian should be able to go, thank you to our police officers. You guys are doing a great job. You put your lives on the line every day. Thank you. It's so sacrificial. Are there some things you need, like some reforms within the system? 100%. In any system, there's always reforms. But how can I also say Black Lives Matter? And God loves black people. And like, I don't know.
Totally. Anyway. Well, yeah. And then also, it's like, again, I think a phrase that has been very helpful for me is like, lots of things can be true at the same time, you know? And so to say what you just said, like, say, like, we support our police. Same with you. I just had a conversation with one of our police officers the other night, and I'm like, oh, what a good guy. And like, I'm so thankful that this person is on the front lines in this way. And he's great, you know, and I trust him and I want him to be, you know, a police officer. And then what happened to George Floyd is horrible and wrong. And we need to condemn that as Christians. Right. And we do that and say, like, this is wrong. This is evil. And yes, that person should have been not only fired, but put on trial now for, you know, for murder charges and stuff. And, but those two things are both, in my opinion, are both true. We have, we have so many wonderful police officers, and then of course we have we have human beings on the police force, which means there are going to be, you know, there's going to be problems and big problems that we have to deal with and wrestle with. And but yeah, the defund the police, and I know, not to get too specific about it, I think I was thinking about that as well, and I love the idea of reform, like you said, Matthew. I think that's so good, and also pouring money, like, maybe there's, again, nuance is one of my favorite words these days. Like, I just feel like there's so many things that we could be doing to, let's keep pouring into great services that will help people heal that are struggling with, you know, mental health issues or whatever. And let's keep on working at, even in our prison systems. Like, I think there, let's focus on restoration, you know, but there's the long-term, there's kind of the big view approach, I think, which is more like that. And then there's the immediate, like, I don't know if you guys have ever been in situations where you've needed to call the police, or you've needed to, where you've, at least I've certainly been in situations where I'm very thankful that there was a police force to call, because in that moment it would not have worked to call a social worker. It wouldn't have worked to, you know, and so I feel like it's almost like in some ways it feels like it could be apples and oranges a little bit, right? Like there's one that we're talking about, like when there's like we like in moments of crisis, in moments of you know, the heat of the moment kind of thing, where you actually need someone to come in with authority and say and assert power in a situation, assert authority, like that to me, it doesn't make sense then to say, no, we can get rid of that and we can just have, you know, people that are gonna focus on the long-term health of a person or whatever, you know? So anyways, whatever. Yeah. I know there's so much more to it, but go ahead, Julie.
And I also just want to say too, I do think it's important to highlight, there's been beautiful pictures of police officers joining Black Lives Matter marches,
you know?
And I feel like I've more so than I remember in the past seeing, you know, people sharing this on social media. So I think that's a beautiful example of that. Both can be true. There are great, wonderful police officers out there who care very much about the Black people in their community, and they're showing their support as well. So
Hey, one final little thing that I really just want to talk about and try to bring some clarity to is just in the sermon 8 days ago or so on Exodus 19, I talked about intersectionality and cancel culture and virtue signaling and things like that. And to me, they all kind of work together a little bit. So I just, one of the things that I think it's important for us to do is to say, 30 years ago, there was just a woman, last name Crenshaw, and she coined the term intersectionality. And I think it is helpful. And I just want to say it is a helpful term. And the idea, if anyone doesn't know what intersectionality is she was working on a court case, I think, where, I don't remember the details, but there's something about the experience of a Black man and the experience of a white woman are different from that of a Black woman. So she's a Black woman, and she was just saying, listen, the Black man has an advantage because he's a male. The white woman has some advantage because she's white. So in a culture that, you know, where white men are kind of in charge of everything, right? Like a Black woman, you have to realize that there, it's like an intersection, like where cars go through, like cars go through an intersection. It's like there's actually two roads that lead in, like, so she's Black and she's a woman. And so she developed this concept called intersectionality, which say you should really pay attention to the fact that people have different kind of roads that come together and inform who they are. So sexuality and socioeconomic class and gender and race, and in order to understand the reality that somebody is living in, you have to take all these roads seriously. Mm. Now, I would just like to say, yes, that, man, if I want to love my neighbor, which is the core of the law, love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor. If I want to love my neighbor, I really want to know what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay, you're a Black woman. Like, you're going through a set of things that me as a white male, I wouldn't know that, right? Mm-hmm. And, but I think the reason why I still struggle with intersectionality is that maybe not so much the tool as it is, but what it can become, I think. Like, and I think as an instrument, it's okay, but as an ideology, it is difficult to actually follow this because it feels like it's now an inverted caste system where, again, and so Tolu, this might be me feeling threatened, but like the white Christian male from America and from Oklahoma who was born in Texas is clearly at the bottom of that intersectionality, right? Like, and so basically what it means is that like my voice can't speak into something. Right. So, well, here I am on a podcast and I'm talking, but like, I maybe someone is actually listening to me going, well, I'm not going to take anything you say because you aren't, let's say maybe the top of that would be someone who's like a trans Black woman, right? Like might say, oh, actually they have so much, a poor trans Black woman, right? That's like, they have so many roads intersecting that they, Matthew, you cannot speak into her life because you just don't get it. And so there's an inversion of the power structure. Mm. And there's this sense of like, it goes with the cancel culture idea. Like, so when you have like, let's say a white professor who is trying to speak at an Ivy League school on something, but the cancel culture comes in and goes, well, what kind of authority do you have to speak into our lives? Like you don't have any, so intersectionality becomes this upside down new way of being a Pharisee. It's this new caste system. And I guess I just struggle with it because I kind of wonder, like Dr. Martin Luther King, like would he have been a proponent of this, right? Where you find people linked up, you know, women and men and black and white linked up together with this vision of like an America that was healed, right? And I struggle with intersectionality, not as a helpful tool, but as an ideology. And it goes with the cancel culture. So, yeah. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think you're right. And I feel like it seems like so many things have like healthy impulses, or like it's like they start out as a healthy impulse, like a healthy thing where it's like, yeah, like you said, where it's like, yeah, like put yourself in another person's shoes. Try to understand where they're coming from. And like,
right.
And it's true. I will never understand fully what, say, a black woman's experience is growing up in Western Canada, right? It's very, I'm sure it's extremely different than my experience as a white male, you know? But yeah, you're right. It's like when it's like a good and healthy tool turns into maybe a weapon, right? When it turns into suddenly a weapon that is used to actually do the exact opposite that maybe they feel has been happening to them, right? That would be maybe giving the benefit of the doubt, right? Might be like where it's like, okay, right. So, and it's sort of like the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's like, well, guess what? We're turning this thing on its head and now you are at the bottom, which again, doesn't feel like the Jesus way either, right? Like there's somewhere in the middle where it's like, hey, yeah. And I remember Philip Yancey, the Christian author who I really love that term. You kind of alluded to it, but the idea of when he was sort of just frustrated at like, you know, conservative Pharisaical people, but he kind of cautioned himself and says, like, you know, I was turning into a different kind of Pharisee, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the danger in it all. And again, nuance is just like, yeah, well, this comes from a healthy place, but how do we figure out better ways of doing it as opposed to just, you know, hitting back with an equal and opposite reaction kind of thing, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
And I'm just curious. I hope this doesn't come across like challenging, but
no.
Is it from like whether it's a specific example, and you kind of mentioned that like the Ivy League school example, but like where you have felt that was taken too far? Because I guess where that question is coming from is, can I kind of hear that and I land at the helpful tool point?
Yes.
And like, yes, I need to recognize that there's so many things that can be in fact affecting a person's experience. And that kind of is the end for me.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm wondering, like, what for you kind of sees that extreme of like, okay, and then what happens if you take this to the nth degree, you know, whether that's, yeah, like examples that you've seen or maybe just the way you process that.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the big things that comes to mind is actually what it's doing in the reactionary white communities. So it's actually kind of a different way of answering your question.
That makes a lot of sense.
So there's a movement, I don't know if you guys heard of it, called It's Okay to Be White. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. But no. So like you can see like posters around cities. Like, so people like, it's like, you know, the gorilla thing, like you don't see them doing it, but it's like, you know, they're posting up stickers and stuff. It's like, it's okay to be white. It's okay to be white. Now, are these like far right white supremacists, or is this just all of a sudden this reaction to like all of a sudden being white is not a good thing? And what I feel like it's inadvertently doing. So intersectionality, where it feels like it's turned the pyramid upside down, I think there's some helpful things there, but what it does is it encourages people to get more tribal. And so I fear, and this is the brilliance of Dr. King, is that I don't think he followed the Malcolm X or the Black Panthers. Like he wasn't going to go down that route because he knew that the only way for black and white to live together in absolute peace was to not hit back. And so what I fear is that intersectionality, if it feels like the white person suddenly is like at the bottom of like, you don't have authority to speak into this, like then it causes the "it's okay to be white" campaigns to start happening, and we don't want that. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. like, this is not what we want. This is not going to help the situation, because you're inflaming, you're just making it. You're just, it's a new caste system. It's just mm-hmm. different players are on different sides, and I don't, and I fear that. Mm. I fear that, because I feel like then white people are going to have to say, "I matter too," mm-hmm. and I'm like, we knew that. But you don't have to.
Why are you saying that? Exactly.
Right. But it is one of those things, and I do worry about this, and I want to mm-hmm. kind of end with a final thought here. I want us to look really critically at virtue signaling. I said this in the sermon. The New York Times defines it as feigned righteousness intended to make the speaker appear superior by condemning others. And there was this pressure to virtue signal early on, with right after George Floyd was murdered. And I felt this pressure that as an organization, even as a church, we were supposed to put out a statement and to virtue signal. Now, it's funny. This is one of those things where I feel like I'm in the middle again, right? Where I'm like, yeah, we should say, and we did, like the church released a statement saying mm-hmm. racism is wrong and it's not God's heart. And yet I was like, I wasn't sure about being pressured into mm-hmm. doing this. It's like, you know, all of a sudden, like a hamburger company is saying that they're against racism, or right. Superstore sent out a message and Tanya mm-hmm. was like, look, they're standing against racism. And I'm like, this is like, it's really good. It's really good. But the place I buy my milk, I wasn't thinking they needed to virtue signal. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't thinking, I wasn't waiting for Superstore's reaction mm-hmm. to this. But is it good that they took a stand? Absolutely. Are they taking stands on other issues? Like the virtue signaling thing presents a right image in a righteous way. Being silent is not allowed. And I get that too. Like you can't be silent at a time where we need someone to speak up, but it doesn't feel like there's a lack of speaking up. It's more like a monitoring of everyone who is speaking mm-hmm. up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, is there a voice to the voiceless? It's like, that's not really it. It's like, if you don't play by the rules, then there's a shaming that happens. Mm-hmm. Personally, I just needed a little bit more time to process stuff. I remember feeling like, oh man, we got to make a statement. And quickly we're like, we told Tim to make it, right? We're like, Tim, can you write something? Because you're like good with words.
Because Tim's the best. Yeah,
because I was still processing all this stuff. I was like, I literally was still stuck. Like it's like that spinning thing on a Mac, like that rainbow circle, where it was just like, I was stuck with like, why are we disagreeing about this? Mm-hmm. Isn't this police brutality? Isn't it clear? Isn't this about racism? Isn't it clear? And then even going, the church, you need to say something. And I'm like, have we not been, I guess we haven't been clear. You know, we haven't done a series on racism, so maybe we haven't been clear. I just was so caught off guard mm-hmm. by the need to virtue signal. Yeah, right. And anyway, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on virtue signaling and how it works, but it did feel like it does feel like a peer pressure mm-hmm. that I'm not always sure is helpful. Mm-hmm. But you guys might disagree with that. So tell me what you think.
That's definitely something that has been very, on my mind, because I have to kind of caution my tendency to kind of want to, brush aside, or like, oh, everything's fine. You know, it's not a big problem, versus like, oh no, actually I do kind of feel like there is a bit of a, an unhealthy pressure that I am seeing in some ways. And an example, like a friend was sharing that, their friend's wife runs an Instagram page for like kids meals, you know, meal ideas for kids and stuff. And they did put out a statement, you know, saying that they, you know, are grieving for the Floyd family and how this was a, you know, terrible thing that happened. But they received comments saying, you know, why didn't you say more? You have such a huge platform. You need to be using it. And that kind of shame, like my heart breaks for that person. Cause I mean, and they did say something but it wasn't enough, you know? And
totally.
And so, yeah, that to me does, you know, it's that dichotomy of like, yeah, silence silence does contribute to oppression. And so there is this kind of rising up of people saying, okay, we can't be silent. We want to speak up. But it does feel right now that, like, if you post anything on Facebook that isn't against racism, you're going to get slammed for it. Like, it's just,
yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't really like that.
Sure. But, sure.
Yeah.
Cause you'd want it to be genuine.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Right?
Like, I'd hope someone would go, totally. This is more than a Facebook post. I'm actually in my life embodying mm-hmm. the heart of reconciliation.
Exactly.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's all, yeah, it's almost like you're displaying a badge, though. That's almost what it is more like. As, and I know, like, so I'm in the middle of it, too. Maybe I'm a little more, I don't know. Like, because I was thinking back to our conversation earlier about how sometimes you need to speak the language that the person is needing to hear. You know what I mean? Like, so in this moment, I think what I was feeling like with us, like, as a church, I was kind of like, hey, look, maybe there is a part of this that feels ridiculous. You know, for me, it feels like, what feels ridiculous is the fact that anyone would question whether or not North Langley Community Church opposes mm-hmm. racism. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, really? Does anyone actually think that we don't, you know? But then I'm like, but you know, maybe the positive side of this, so the healthy side of this is that a healthy perspective is just that maybe we are in a time, a very unique time right now where this has exploded on the scene. There's a lot of damage, a lot of pain, a lot of grief, a lot of whatever, a lot of things rising up, you know? And so maybe in this moment, even though it feels to me, again, as a, I would say, and I don't, you know, I'm not a big term person, but as a person who does have a lot of privilege, who is white and who is male, you know, like maybe actually I can, maybe the right thing to do is actually to say, okay, so maybe I find a lot of this, like, this seems dumb to me, because I hope anyone who knows Corey Alsted, I would hope would know, like, yeah, Corey is not a racist person at all. Corey, whatever, wouldn't be that way. But maybe I just need to speak the language that this current situation is calling for, because of the fact that it's very volatile. There's a lot of pain here. And it seems like, unfortunately, there is, I don't know, I know. And sometimes this is where I don't want to be wishy-washy, but sometimes I'm like, you know, sometimes you do have to, this is terrible, play the game. I don't mean the game, but I mean, like, you're like, you are in the same game that we're all in together. And right now the rules have changed for a little while, you know, in terms of what you need to say and what you don't need to say and how you, so sometimes I'm just like, you know, I think now is the time that actually we just say, look, hey, we need to acknowledge, I hope this is clear with everyone, but even just in case it's not, we oppose racism. It's terrible. You know,
right.
That's kind of where I sort of landed with it. I'm like, I think this is what is required right now, because that's what our listeners or some of our listeners, some of our people do, they just need to hear this. And so it's like, okay, then we need to say it. I don't
right.
know. That's
right.
That's just one perspective, but it can become super unhealthy quickly too. So
yeah. I was picking up, did you guys ever read Blue Like Jazz?
Yeah.
So I found it in my giveaway pile. I was going to give it away, but I just was thumbing through it. And chapter two, he says, Donald Miller is at a protest in Portland. Hmm. And it was something about George Bush came to Portland and he was like joining a mob of people and protesting about how much American foreign policy is hurting the poor or something like that. And he says he's in the middle of the crowd and he realizes he hadn't given any money to the poor in a really long time, but he was like really just like yelling at Bush, right?
That's
like,
right. Yeah.
And he was just like, it was that G.K. Chesterton idea. He's just like, he goes home and he's just like, okay, I think I'm the problem.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah,
I think right. like I was, it was easier for me to go to a rally and yell like that than it was to like mm-hmm. address the things in me. And I think actually before I go on, do either of you want to contribute to that thought?
Yeah, actually, I think for me, one of the biggest takeaways that I've had from all of this and over the last few weeks is, you know, and not in any way to, you know, again, I have to always be careful not to just brush past, you know, if there's the hurt that's there or the, you know, past experiences, you know, that definitely needs to be dealt with. And this is a time right now where, you know, specifically Black lives are kind of, that's the topic mm-hmm. That is very prevalent, but it has made me reflect and realize where are there areas where I am privileged above someone else, and and what am I doing to, you know, try to create opportunities for those people to be able to have a voice. And so, yeah, whether that's, you know, me as a man, you know, creating space for women, or me as an able-bodied person, you know, just these, recognizing these other areas where I am, you know, part of a group that, yeah. You know, maybe is seen to have more power than another. And so, yeah, it's been helpful for me to kind of think again, you know, and yeah, this is one area in which I am part of the minority or the group that has been oppressed in ways. But are there ways in which I'm contributing to the oppression of others? And I think especially, you know, Kim works a lot with Indigenous youth, and that's been one area that she has such a huge heart for and has really helped me as well to see the plight that a lot of, you know, especially kids in foster care and things like that. And there's just so much opportunity to come alongside them and become more of an ally there. So totally. I think that's just the main takeaway that I've had coming out of this. Yeah.
Maybe to wind this down, but just to say, we are the problem. Mm. Like, you know, human sin, and connecting it to our part one of our podcast is just going, Genesis 3, right? Like to always go, Lord, am I treating those who are not like me in such a way that honors you? Mm-hmm. And have I been gripped by the vision of all languages and all peoples gathered around your throne, worshiping the Lamb that was slain? Like, do I have that vision from Revelation of all peoples? And I'd love to kind of just end with this picture of what I think is the very first Black person to come to know Jesus. And I was thinking about Acts chapter 8, and Philip is comes up to a Cushite, an Ethiopian, and he's got the scrolls open from Isaiah, and he's reading Isaiah 53. And what I love is a brown-skinned, presumably, Philip, sitting on a chariot with a black-skinned Ethiopian and a Cushite. And they're reading from Isaiah. And they're reading, he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we're healed. And I just want to encourage us, North Langley, like, it's by his wounds that we'll ever find any healing, racial reconciliation or healing. The Lamb that was slain heals the wounds among us. And let's keep doing what Tolu encouraged us with, like growing in our understanding and in our listening to one another, looking forward to the day when a great multitude will gather around the throne from every nation and people group and sing, worthy is the Lamb. And so I just want to end with that vision of what we're called to be.
Cool.
So yeah, thank you, Tolu, for being part of this.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really, it's been awesome.
Super awesome. Yeah, loved hearing your story. And yeah, I think that's it. Thank you guys so much. We love you. Have a great rest of your week. God bless you. And we will talk to you soon.